it's not complicated. We see it happening before our eyes, and we have the evidence of the past to make that projection into our case.
And based on that evidence, the questions beg, do we have a rule of law? Will that rule of law be upheld? Or are we subject to the whims, the dictates, the mandate of this elitist class? And or are they also subject to the rule of law? We have laid out specific claims in our case. Ours is a civil tax claim, okay? We laid out, and we highlighted in the congressional hearing that the Clinton Foundation was acting as a foreign agent, okay? It was operating outside of its approved authority, okay? They were making material misrepresentations in their reports, many of which were signed under penalty of perjury, but also that the private foundations, okay, and none more than the Clinton Foundation's second largest owner, that is the Gates Foundation, are themselves subject to tax based on donations that they made to the Clinton Foundation. I mean, the Gates
and others.
And many others.
And others. There's a multiplier.
I mean, you recognize the Pritzker name out of Illinois. They're subject. So you have all of that. Ours is a civil tax claim. If somebody wanted to make a criminal case, that's not for us. Clearly, we could support it based on our evidence, but ours is a civil tax claim. Does it look like a RICO? Well, you know what? Whitey's got more experience in that space than I do.
If you look to the ICC, the International Criminal Court, you see a recent filing naming many of the folks involved with all of this. Mike, are you aware of that filing?
I had heard some rumblings about it about 10 days ago.
On behalf
You look at the names who are named defendants. Larry, you can give a roll call.
Oh, yeah. Hey, let's, right here. Anthony Fauci, we know him. Peter Daszak from EcoHealth Alliance, we know him. Melinda Gates, we know her. William Gates, yep, we know him. Okay, Albert Bourla, CEO of Pfizer. Stefan Bancel, CEO of AstraZeneca. The CEO of Moderna, the CEO of J&J. How about Tedros? You know Tedros, right? Director General of World Health.
Everybody's favorite corrupt.
how about this one, though? Dr. Ravid Shah. People may not know him. He's the president of the Rockefeller Foundation. He previously worked at the Gates Foundation, but in between those two assignments, you know what he was? He was the head of USAID while none other than Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. How about that, huh?
Secretary of State, but as you have talked about and you actually exposed, she took over the checkbook also for USAID, which was highly, you don't 100%. Do that. Yeah, so
right.
She had
that's
another
right.
$10, $12 billion to hand out. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Follow the money.
But there's a couple other people in that in that case, too. Schwab is in there, president of the World Economic Forum.
Schwab, president of the World Economic Forum. So, truth be told, I mean, the people bringing this case, they'd probably be interested in our evidence.
Well, let me ask you something real quick. In any discussions you had with the special prosecutor's office, did the topic of Wuhan come up? Are you allowed to say that?
Yeah, we can't talk about that. No.
Okay. I just had to ask it because it's burning a hole in my head right now, knowing what
we know.
What
you got to look at is who's contributory construction consultant to the Wuhan virology labs? Who helped build those T4 and level 4 labs. Was Stefan Bonsell involved with that?
Yeah, that's right. CEO of Moderna.
Right, so...
Oh, that's right. That's rather.
Right. So you gotta take a look at the players. That's what we do. Look at the lab. Who helped make it in some capacity? Who's now benefiting from the results of what happened in that lab? From a financial, I mean, honestly, it's really not complicated. You just have to look. But most folks have their regular job. They go to their office. They're taking care of the family, what they should do. But given what's going on in the world, stay home, mask mandates, don't leave your house, it is becoming, as you said, Mike, brilliantly at the beginning of this, we're working on a case that actually affects our own families because it affects your family and everybody else's family. Now it's personal. Take a look. When you have some downtime, take a look on your iPad instead of TikTok. Take a look. Look at some of these things. And you start to realize it is all the same people. It's really not complicated. It's all the same people. And that's not a coincidence.
So we got a couple of Irish guys, one from Boston, one from Worcester, looking at a couple of tax returns back in late 2015, early 2016. And now we're smack dab in the middle of this global pandemic and the largest political scandal in the history of the United States. How about that, huh?
It's not surprising. You guys are fantastic at what you do, number one. Number two, you're troublemakers, so it has a lot to do with it.
Well, and again, you know what? I mean, I guess we can chuckle a little bit, but this is very, very serious stuff. And honestly, we're very serious guys. We take this with the utmost seriousness, and this is major stuff. But,
Mike, the book I always talk to Larry about us writing is titled Government Risk. It's the risk the citizens take on when they assume that the government is acting in their best interest. That assumption is genuine. Our existence here in the country is predicated upon trust in the three institutions, judiciary, legislative, and executive. I don't know if that same level of trust exists anymore. And people are starting to realize the risk component to that trust is changing, right? On the paradigm. That's changing. And people are starting to become acutely aware that 501c3s, cash flow, the government has become an industry now. They're not supervisors for the purpose of execution, for the good of infrastructure for all of us. It's now an industry. There's so much cash flow.
Yeah, it is.
That it becomes a capitalization mechanism to execute all of this stuff. Insurance reimbursement of payments to pharmaceutical companies. Those are private companies. I'd like the government to pay me to go through our investigation. I mean, it doesn't happen like that. Or I'm sure General Motors would love the government to pay them to build cars. But if they don't make good cars, they go out of business. It's just like there's so many of these nonprofits, which is the cover of philanthropy. There isn't philanthropy going on in a lot of them. There's bad stuff. And we're not ever going to sit back as long as we're working and just sort of let that happen and give it a pass. Easy pass on the highway. Nah.
I mean, Whitey is right. That tax-exempt division inside the IRS, this is like everybody in that D.C. zip code is just like, hey, hush, 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 hush. Because this is where they go to get paid. This is where they go to get paid. And whose dollars are those? Those are the American taxpayers' dollars, right? And this is, we've got a deficit now running upwards, you know, what, $30 trillion.
Yeah,
and
30, 32.
Okay, and these guys have the balls to set up this tax-exempt division with little oversight, and we're calling them on it. This has to change. We've got a case. See, we've got a game, right? I mean, you talk about, hey, who's got next on the hoop court? Well, we're on the hoop court, right?
Yeah.
Ball in. Game on. Okay, game on. And we've been in U.S. tax court for 2.5 years. We're not there because we're not credible. We're very credible. But we're playing to win, both for ourselves and the American public. But this is, you know, we're at a point in history here where there needs to be an accounting. And we're the ones calling them out. And that's a good thing. And we're not stopping.
Do you think that they're afraid that those documents you've compiled get? I mean, obviously they sealed the case. They didn't have to seal the case in tax court. You didn't. That's not something you requested, right? Are they afraid that those documents could see the public light? I mean, because there's some the guys in justice tell us there's some bombs in there, man.
Yeah, I mean
bombs.
Like there's a lot of problems, and you know. So you look at it this way, the folks who are looking at those problems now aren't necessarily the folks who were there at the time all of these problems developed, right? So they're not read into it until we file on them. Then we have this discourse back and forth in the court, and now they're compelled to address these bombs. See, that's when we win summary judgment, which is when they try to kick us out. We win. Now the burden shifts. The burden's on us to bring a credible action. The judge believes it's credible. That's why we win. Now the burden shifts on them. You need to unravel these bombs. I'm going to seal it, but you're going to unravel these bombs. And that's what we're doing. That's what the process is. And you know what? That's hard for the people who are there now because they weren't necessarily there when Lois Lerner was there, running TVG.
Yeah, but they still have to protect the people involved, the overlords, so to speak, the big players, the globalists. Otherwise, they won't have a job.
But again, Michael,
it unravels. The whole thing unravels.
Exactly.
But Michael,
exactly
right. You know what? We're a nation of laws, not of men, right? So they may try to protect, but guess what? The question begs, who's protecting the public interest? Okay?
Yeah.
And that's why facts and documented evidence and these formal exhibits that we have are the most intimidating force of all. Okay? Very intimidating. But guess what? It's all about the rule of law. Because if you don't have the rule of law, you know what? You don't have a country. And that's what's on the line.
And the reality is, none of this is our opinion. I mean, I don't have any opinion on the Clintons or Gates. I don't know these people. I never sat down and had dinner with them or I had a cup of coffee. That doesn't matter to me. None of that matters to me. So, Larry, this is about fairness.
That's right.
If you're going to get a 40% head start in the race, then you better make sure you're adhering to the rules of that 40% head start. That doesn't give you a license to change the rules. The rules are the rules. Otherwise, everybody should have a 40% head start, which then means everybody's at the same starting line. So there is no such thing as philanthropy then. Everybody's working for the government. That's communism. So,
numbers standpoint, for people who aren't aware, you know, the top line, I say, reported revenue for the Clinton Foundation and Clinton Health is approximately $3 billion. Okay? The library that they built, which they were approved for, you know, cost all in cost, you know, 100, 150. So, you know, potential liability is a tax, penalties, and interest on, you know, call it $2.9 billion. Okay? Whether you want to use a third or upwards of 40%, I mean, people can do the math here, right? Just the facts. Right, just the fact.
Well, you would think
and
that the IRS.
Have to jump,
Well, just one quick thing. One quick thing. Collins bows out from NIH like he's some kind of superhero. He plays guitar. He leaves. What's your read? I mean, I know why he left, but what's your read on it? It seems like a very strange time to to say, I'm out of here. Things are heating up a little bit.
Yep. The truth can be very intimidating.
And people have a tolerance for heat. They have a tolerance for oversight. And you know what? There's always someone who walks and says, you know what? I'm done with this.
Yeah.
I'm done with this. I'm not, quote, as we said a long time ago on this call, I'm not going down for this. So you know what? Whether he is that guy or not, that's yet to be seen. We don't know. If we knew all this stuff, we'd go play the Powerball and win the $300 million. We just look at the evidence and the trajectory, and it says people are going to bow out of this. The heat is going to be coming. It's a problem. And you start to watch the leaves fall off the tree. And it's starting to fall off the tree. And they're going to get raked up. That's what happens to leaves that fall off the tree. Someone's going to take possession of them.
Well, you guys,
an Irish guy from Boston, another Irish guy from Worcester. Love our country, right?
You guys have been fantastic on here, and I know you have a ton of interview requests. I mean, you guys, last time you were on the show, I know you got hammered. Everybody came out of the woodwork. Hey, why are you talking to Moore? What's going on there? So we appreciate, man. I know our listeners do. And
well, you don't come at us with any agenda either, Mike. We don't. Our agenda is to win. We want to win, and if we win, the IRS wins, and if the IRS wins, they win for the public. You want the same thing. That's why we talk to you. I didn't hear any Pfizer, Moderna, or AstraZeneca pharmaceutical ads on this thing. There was no break for that. You know.
No, but I'm interested in it from an intel point of view. And I think a lot of other guys, you would have to try to pick up a hitchhiker at 90 miles an hour. I understand everything you're saying. And my head's going 150 miles an hour, just like yours. You know what I mean? I understand all the angles, all of them. And some of the angles we can't even tell the public because it just wouldn't make sense to them because they're not going at 150 miles an hour. So
that's right. And that's why it's so important for perspective. Right. I mean, there's nothing better for us than when we sit down and we engage people and we realize very quickly that we have so much more evidence and information than those people, whether those people are in the government, outside of the government. We know more about this than they do. OK, that is obviously a very good thing for us. But this it's all about perspective and honestly, people are busy, as Whitey alluded to here many times, you know, acting in a very practical fashion. But this is what we do for our living. You know, we make cases, all documented evidence, and we play to win.
Yeah, we're just playing to win.
Well,
we're pretty simple guys. We're not really complicated, you know.
One last thing, Michael, if I could.
Go ahead.
We do have a public presence.
Yeah, I was going to say, where can people find you? See, Larry, you're like a seasoned pro. You're like a seasoned pro, man.
Yeah.
I don't know about any of this. I'm lucky if I get the TV on.
Yeah. our Twitter account is at LWDoyleUSA. It's heavily shadow banned and censored and all that stuff, so... You know, that's all part of the rackets that they run to silence, you know, free speech and everything else. But we're banging away and we share periodically insights that we can. Again, we'll do nothing to jeopardize our case in U.S. tax court. But that's where people can find us, at LWDoyleUSA on Twitter. And we're fighting. And you know what? And in the spirit of the holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays to everybody, not only in the States but around the world.
Well, I appreciate it, guys, and we are allowed to say Merry Christmas on this show. So that's
Merry Christmas.
You got that covered, Whitey. Thanks, perfect. Brother. Merry I just Christmas. Had a.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, Whitey, I appreciate it, man.
Mike, all good here, buddy.
Yeah, man, we're good, and we'll get this thing out the door as soon as possible, and I'll keep you updated on it, and we'll go from there. So it's another good one. I mean, it's fantastic.
Buddy. Okay.
All right, brother. Thanks, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Take care, man.
See you later.
Merry Christmas. Bye.
Welcome to you all. Pursuant to committee rules, all witnesses will be sworn in before they testify. So if you will please stand and raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you're about to give is the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. Let the record reflect that the witnesses answered in the affirmative. In order to allow time for discussion and, quite frankly, for a Q&A that you'll get quite a bit of, your entire written statement will be made part of the record. But we would ask that you would limit your oral testimony or opening remarks to 5 minutes. There's a clock in front of you to remind you of that. It'll turn yellow when you have 30 seconds left. And if you'll please make sure that you press the button when you're speaking. And so what we will do is we can you know, have your opening testimony a combined 10 minutes, so however you want to do that. And so, Mr. Doyle, we'll come to you first, and then you can yield to Mr. Monahan.
I would like to yield to Mr. Moynihan to open, please.
Okay. So, Mr. Moynihan, you are recognized for up to 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to thank you, Chairman Meadows, and other members of the committee for having us here today. My name is John Moynihan, and I'm one of three partners that engaged in this investigative effort involving a 501c3, and in particular, the Clinton Foundation, the subject of today's hearing. Please note that we do many investigations into 501c3s, and this is just one of many. When I'm finished, I'd like to introduce my two colleagues that are here today, Mr. Doyle, and if it's possible, Mr. Thomas Ragland from the Clark Hill Law Firm. Tom has been very active with us in our efforts. As we move through this, at the conclusion of Mr. Doyle's introduction, I would like to answer two questions for the committee. Who are we, and why did we do this? I think the 90s. We're financial investigators. We started with the returns that the foundation.
Comparing the Clinton Foundation with the Global Fund and PEPFAR, the results were stark.
Our conclusions in the interest of time are this: foreign agent. The foundation began acting as an agent of foreign from all the states in which they operated to specific questions about violations, consent decrees, or penalties that they may have paid to those states. We did an analysis of that. The results are quite shocking.
In addition to that, we sourced contracts, MOUs, and interaction with foreign governments, including email exchanges between senior foundation executives and government officials. Additionally, we did a review of all their foreign offices, and we drew a spreadsheet comparing the Clinton Foundation with the Global Fund and PEPFAR. The results were stark.
Our conclusions in the interest of time are this: foreign agent. The foundation began acting as an agent of foreign governments early in its life and has continued doing so throughout its existence. As such, the foundation should have registered under FARA. Ultimately, the foundation and its auditors acknowledged this fact and conceded in formal submissions that it did operate as an agent. Therefore, the foundation is not entitled to 501c3 tax exemption privileges as outlined in IRS 170c2. Misrepresentations. The Clinton Foundation did not comply with the requirements of 501c3 and that it far exceeded the purposes detailed in its original Articles of Incorporation filed December 23, 1997, and subsequently reaffirmed in numerous other records across many jurisdictions, including with NARA. The Foundation did pursue programs and activities for which it had neither sought nor achieved permission to undertake. Such was the case even before the completion and transferral of the Presidential Library in 2004. As such, representation by the foundation to donors was a misrepresentation of the approval organizational tax status allowing it to raise funds for the Presidential Library and related programs therein. In these pursuits, the foundation failed the organizational and operational tests 501c3 Internal Revenue Code 7.25.3.
Additionally, the intentional misuse of donated public funds. The foundation falsely attested that it received funds and used them for charitable purposes, which was in fact not the case. Rather, the foundation pursued an array of activities both domestically and abroad. Some may be deemed philanthropic, albeit unimproved, while others, much larger in scope, are properly characterized as profit-oriented and taxable undertakings of private enterprise, again failing the operational tests for philanthropy referenced above. The investigation clearly demonstrates that the foundation was not a charitable organization per se, but in point of fact was a closely held family partnership. As such, it was governed in a fashion in which it sought in large measure to advance the personal interests of its principals as detailed within the financial analysis of this submission and further confirmed within the supporting documentation and evidence section. Our last finding, donors' responsibilities. The private foundations that donated to the Clinton Foundation are themselves subject to tax payments on the donations that they made to the foundation under code IRC 4945, unless they meet specific conditions as outlined in IRS code 727-19582.
Completed. Thank you for your time. Our focus is on financial analysis and whether they live within the boundaries. As part and parcel of that investigation, we did come across instances of that, but we put that into a catch-all category of just outside the boundaries. That's really
outside. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to yield the balance of my time to the gentleman from Ohio.
You said in your opening statement you used the term agent of a foreign government. Give me an example of that.
You want to take that one there?
Sure. There are so many examples. Mozambique, in 2002, there was a memorandum of agreement between the foundation and the Mozambique to work on their behalf through their Ministry of Health program. And again, through that engagement, it was plainly obvious, again, based on emails that we've reviewed, that this was not a Clinton Foundation program per se. They were there to support the Mozambique Ministry of Health. So really, if we want to reduce this to layman's terms, they were brokering money and they were brokering pharmaceuticals. That's the term on Wall Street we use, brokering. John uses the term agent. They were an agent of money through these donors. They would take a, for lack of a better term, a VIG in terms of their fees, broker the money, and then they negotiated these relationships with the pharmaceutical companies. And by the same token, they were brokering the pharmaceuticals and, again, taking the VIG.
And is that why you, I think one of your concluding remarks was the Clinton Foundation functioned as a closely held family partnership, not a charity?
Yes. The reality is the difference between public charities, private foundations are very exact. Public charities are organizations that are allowed to solicit funds from the general public, which is what they were approved for the library. And they followed that. They solicited funds from public folks. Going along with that, public charities really don't make grants. They don't. They're the end users. They do the program. I have my own 501c3s involving baseball. I fix up a lot of baseball fields in Massachusetts. So when people donate to that, it's very $20,000. We go and we pull the weeds out, okay? We do the work. Private foundations are different. Melinda and Bill Gates. On those boards, there may be one or two individuals. Those foundations are governed in a way that there is a specific function that's going to go on, and they issue grants. A lot of times, those grants go to a public charity. There are striking differences between public charities and private foundations. What happened here, for whatever reason, we don't know and don't have an opinion on it, it became a hybrid. And our analysis shows that this hybrid modeled the Global Fund in Geneva, Switzerland.
That is a hugely important point.
The difference between the Global Fund being a Geneva-based operation that does exactly what Mr. Doyle said, which is to take funds from one country, for whatever purpose, pharmaceuticals or tuberculosis, and to help another country, they are the facilitator, the agent. The difference is they are not subject to U.S. taxation, jurisdiction, or law. The Clinton Foundation, in conjunction with those same donor countries to the Global Fund and the same recipient countries as the Global Fund, created a separate entity called UNITAID that was formed in 2006. Mr. Clinton and Mr. Gates, who was on the board at UNITAID, together formed with these countries this entity. The difference being that UNITAID became the single largest donor to the Clinton Foundation. Those revenues did not stay outside of the United States. They created jurisdiction and venue by flowing back into the United States, Bank of America, Boston, Massachusetts. That then becomes under the jurisdiction of the governing body, the Internal Revenue Service. At that point, going to be a facilitator and an agent of those money flows, the IRS code could not be any more specific. You can't do that and be an exempt organization. It's okay that you do it. You just pay your taxes.
Okay. I'm going to cut you off there. The gentleman's time has expired. So Mr. Doyle, Mr. Moynihan, I'm going to ask you to try to be succinct and direct and bluntly. Maybe dumb it down for me. I mean, you're talking about stuff that, quite frankly, I have no clue. You know, when you start quoting different statutes and things like that, the average American, we just want to know if there's wrongdoing or not. And I know you say you don't have an opinion. If you don't have an opinion, then why did you file a probable cause filing with the IRS? Because obviously you have an opinion that something was wrong or you wouldn't have done a probable cause.
Based
Is that correct?
Based on our facts.
On facts.
Based on your facts, do you believe there's probable cause of wrongdoing? Yes or no?
Yes.
Mr. Doyle?
Hugely. Yes.
Okay. All right. So let me get to this. I think you guys have been well advised in terms of trying to protect your interests. So let me just be blunt. I checked with the IRS commissioner. Nothing that you say in this forum, according to him, will actually affect any potential claim that you've already submitted. That's what he told me. So if that is indeed the case, do you have a problem giving the 6,000 pages that you've submitted, if it will not affect your financial claims, to the minority and the majority of this committee? Do you have a problem with that?
We'll take that under advisement with counsel.
Then you need to go ahead with your counsel right now, because, listen, my patience is running thin.
Mm-hmm.